If I was Universal Times, stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this latest world news headline.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. UN Security Council held urgent talks on Sunday about the deadly surge of violence in Aleppo as Syrian and Russian jet fighters bombarded the rebel-controlled eastern sector of the Syrian city. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon spoke about the situation in Aleppo.
I'm appalled by the military escalation in the city of Aleppo, which is facing the most sustained and intense bombardment since the start of the Syrian conflict.
Syria's UN envoy, Bashar al-Jafri, vowed that the Syrian government will recapture all of Aleppo, where the UN says 1.7 million people are in need of drinking water. Top member of Yemen's armed Houthi rebel movement has offered a stop attacking targets in the Saudi Arabian side of the border if Saudi-led air coalition stops bombing Houthi targets inside Yemen and lifts a blockade of the country. There was no immediate Saudi response to the proposal. The Houthis, who rose up against the government in 2014, are allied with soldiers loyal to former President Ali Abdullah Saleh. They later seized Yemen's capital Sana'a and forced the president to flee. United Nations says at least 10,000, more than half of them civilians, have been killed in the conflict. Gabon's President Ali Bongo says the country will return to normal after the Constitutional Court Friday threw out a challenge against the election results by opposition rival and veteran African diplomat Jean Ping. It allows Mr. Bongo and his family extending its half-century rule over the country. EU monitors say the court failed to rectify vote counting anomalies. This is VOA News. U.S. presidential candidates met separately with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Sunday on the eve of their first presidential debate. Talks were private, but the campaigns for Democrat Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump issued a statement describing their sessions. Clinton stressed the importance of a strong and secure Israel. Trump's campaign said he and Netanyahu discussed at length Israel's use of a fence to help secure its borders. An example Trump frequently cites when he talks about the wall he wants to build between the U.S. and Mexico. By the way, VOA will be presenting the presidential debate live beginning at 1 hour Universal Time on Tuesday. Check out our website, voanews.com, for coverage. Videos released by police in the U.S. city of Charlotte, North Carolina, show a confrontation between police and 43-year-old African-American Keith Scott. Two videos from body cameras and dash cameras from police officers confronting Scott were released after days of calls by protesters to make the footage public. Kerr Putney, the Charlotte police chief, spoke to reporters over the weekend about the pace of the investigation.
We're 4 days after the incident. We're talking about two independent investigations, and they take time. I'm gonna insist we do it right, not fast.
Ray Dodge, Keith Scott's brother-in-law, also talks about the police videos.
Unfortunately, we are left with far more questions than we have answers. It does not make sense to us how it was possible that this incident resulted in the loss of life. It just does not make sense, and it is not clear in the videos that were released.
Protests against the shooting have been largely peaceful since the release of the videos. On Sunday, dozens of protesters chanted Black Lives Matter outside a professional football game in Charlotte. Superstar American golfer Arnold Palmer has died at the age of 87. Mark Hayes, media manager for Golf Australia in Melbourne, tells VOA Palmer was special in Australia.
Arnold Palmer is a man whose skills, whose charisma, whose passion for golf took the game around the globe. He's revered in Australia just as he is in the States, and I don't suspect for a minute that we're feeling he's lost quite as much as the US is today, but he's going to be missed just as much down under as he is in the States.
Palmer ranked among the most important figures in golf history with 7 major championships as well as 62 PGA Tour wins. For more on that story, plus the rest of the hour's news, check out our website. You can find us at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte, Washington. Today is Monday, September 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan's former first vice president's party announces an armed struggle against President Salva Kiir's government.
This armed resistance is being waged inside South Sudan, where the government is attacking our opposition.
Stephen Powakuo is a senior member of the SPLAIO Political Bureau. President Salva Kiir's government says Riek Machar is a warmonger who has nothing good to offer the people of South Sudan. In Gabon, Jean Ping promises an unspecified new action following a constitutional court's ruling. And a member of the opposition in DRC has called for an international criminal court investigation of last week's violence.
I hope that the international community has to bring this matter to the international court, because the government, you know, shooting people, the government organizing this massacre.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC known as the Rassemblement. Zimbabwe's tourism minister is endorsed for the UN World Tourism Organization, and the new African American Museum has been dedicated in Washington. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former South Sudan First Vice President Riek Machar has called for an armed struggle against the government of President Salva Kiir. The decision was announced in a statement issued over the weekend by Machar's SPLMIO following a meeting in Khartoum, Sudan. Stephen Parkour, a senior member of the SPLMIO Political Bureau, says their armed resistance is in reaction to the Juba government's repeated attacks on SPLAIO positions.
We have been waging armed resistance since 2013, when this war was imposed on us. We have suspended that until we were attacked recently in Juba. We also informed that the government is launching attack on our position everywhere in the country. So we are putting up a resistance now.
If you're putting up resistance, aren't you going to cost more lives?
Well, please be educated that we are violent, ethnocentric regimes of Salva Kiir, who has been actually initiating this violence. So whatever we are doing is not initiation of violence, but responding to violence.
Don't you think that the people of South Sudan are war-weary, that they may look upon what you have declared as another attempt to put the country in more darkness?
You know, the people of South Sudan do not need war, and I agree with you. This war has been destructive, but you must understand that the people are just responding to these massacres, to this genocide, to the systematic killing by the government, which pretend to be the government of the people. But it is not a war that our people really love to continue with. Our people are war-weary. They want this war to end, but the government has been doing the opposite, killing them. Of course, with violence.
Are you going to wage this armed struggle from outside the country, or do you have representation inside South Sudan?
This armed resistance is being waged inside South Sudan, where the government is attacking our position.
The United Nations General Assembly just concluded. I'm sure you were there. What did you hear about what happened to your leader and the situation in South Sudan?
Well, you know, the United Nations has done only one good thing, and we thank the leadership of Ban Ki-moon of extricating our leader and the leadership of the SPLM-IO in the jungle of Congo. The rest has always been empty threats against Salva Kiir, who has been violating this agreement without any consequences from the United Nations, from the region, and the international community entirely. We have been expecting hard decision to be made against this violent tribal regime in Juba.
So where is Dr. Riek Machar now?
Well, Riek Machar has been in Khartoum on humanitarian grounds getting medical treatment and some rehabilitation, enduring real hardship, physical hardship, on his way to Congo. He's still in Khartoum.
Now, the government will say that his time is over. There's no space for him now with the appointment of Taban Deng Gai.
You read the Provisional Constitution of South Sudan 2011. the terms of Salva Kiir and Riek Machar as running mates out of the election of 2010 expired in July 2015. They were legitimized together only by the agreement. So the two are bound to work together or both leave the political scene of South Sudan.
Stephen Parkour is a senior member of the SPLAIO Political Bureau. He was speaking with me from Washington, D.C. Meanwhile, a spokesman for South Sudan President Salva Kiir says Riek Machar is a warmonger who has nothing good to offer the people of South Sudan, who, he said, are yearning for peace. Attend Wek Attend, says President Kiir and the Government of National Unity in Juba have decided never again to return to war.
I actually read the statement and came up with the conclusion that, you know, Riek Machar would be Riek Machar. He would never have anything, you know, better to offer to people of South Sudan, apart from war. But as President Salva Kiir and the Government of National Unity, we have reached the conclusion that we are not going to go back to war. We are not going to give anybody war, because people of South Sudan deserve more than war. They deserve peace, something better than war. And so we will continue to work for peace with the leader of the SPLAIO, General Taban Dengai, who took over the reign of the SPLAIO after Dr. Riek Machar exit from Juba.
You say you will continue to work for peace, but the statement, Riek Machar's people, they blame your government for pushing them into the bush and wanting to start another war. They accuse your government of attacking them and waging a tribal war.
You know, for anybody who is sensible would think that those who talk like that, you know, have lost their sense. Because what happened on the 8th of July was triggered by the element of the SPLMIO that belong to Riek, that are actually falling under Riek Machar. And even though that, you know, the forces of Riek Machar were thwarted and Dr. Riek Machar was protected by President Salva Kiir, yet he went to his base on the protection of the President Salva Kiir, and on the following day, he attacked again. And until the full fighting started, and afterward, he was forced to leave Juba. So it is Riek Machar who does not have anything better to offer to people of South Sudan other than war. But for us, we are on record that peace is what we can give people of South Sudan. And our president is on record since signing of the CPA, that the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, which culminated into the independence of South Sudan. President Salva Kiir said he was not going to take people of South Sudan to war, even if he's provoked. And he managed. He sailed through all the you know, bumpy relationship with National Congress until South Sudan attained independence. Riek Machar only offered war to people of South Sudan.
If you believe in peace, the SPLA in opposition is saying that your government abrogated the 2015 peace agreement by President Salva Kiir's appointment of Taban Dengai as the first vice president.
No, unless the agreement is connected with personalities. That's my understanding. If the agreement was meant for organizations that sign it, President Salva Kiir on behalf of the SPLM and Dr. Riek Machar on behalf of the SPLM-SPLAIO, and all other stakeholders on their particular organization behalf. If the agreement we have here is what they are actually referring to as being abrogated by the government, then they might be talking about a different agreement then. If they are talking about the agreement on the resolution of conflict in the Republic of South Sudan, in which we are signatory, Article 6.4, talk about when the office of the first vice president falls vacant. Dr. Riek triggered a situation that has led into his exit from Juba.
Attend Wek Attend is the spokesman for South Sudan President Salva Kiir. He was speaking with me from New York City. Today is Monday, September 26, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 and a half minutes past the hour. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, a member of the coalition of leading opposition parties known as the Rassemblement, which held last week's deadly protest, is calling on the international community to launch an investigation into what he calls a massacre of opposition supporters by government security. As many as 50 people were killed, including two policemen. Government spokesman Lambert Mende told VOA the opposition is to blame for employing young thugs, mostly on drugs, to loot and destroy property. But Martin Fayulu, the leader of the Commitment for Citizenship and Development Party, who received serious injuries to his face during the protest, says the opposition were all peaceful protesters. From his hospital bed in Kinshasa, Fayulu explains his well-being.
I think I'm improving. I'm waiting for the doctor tomorrow to see exactly what he will say. For now, I'm still having some pain, and my right eye is completely red, and I have some problem in my head.
I saw your picture on the internet, and I did not recognize you because your head looked very big and your face was very swollen. Can you tell us how did you get wounded?
I received a bullet, a rubber bullet, you know. I was on the front of the demonstration. When we reached the place, what we call Boulevard Triomphal, close to Asosa Avenue, just near the parliament, we were almost 15 meters from those military. Now they decided to shoot, and they started to shoot the real bullet and the rubber bullet. I received the rubber bullet, and some young guys, they received the real bullet. Six of them were wounded. One died immediately.
I spoke to the information minister, and he said that you, the opposition, were responsible for the violence because you had some youth. Some of them were on drugs, and they caused the problem.
No, but I don't know what he's saying. My hands were empty. All of us, we were empty. How can you say that we organized this? They did everything. They even went to the headquarters of political party and destroyed. This is the government. This is the first time in the world I can see such a thing happening. But what I wanted to say also, I hope that the international community has to bring this matter to the international court, because the government, you know, shooting to people, the government organizing this massacre.
Would you like for the International Criminal Court to investigate the violence?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Madame Bensouda has stated so. And we want this to happen quickly because we have proof, and they have to come and see what really happened here. And secondly, I think the international community has to call back Mr. Kodjo. Mr. Kodjo has to leave this country as soon as possible. He cannot spend any time here because he's the one, he's the part of this massacre. Because this thing happened because he didn't want to listen to anybody. Mr. Kodjo has to quickly send away from Congo.
Mr. Fayulu, the injury that you sustained, did that change your mind about the protest? Or do you intend to go to protest again when you come out of the hospital?
Yeah. We cannot stop. Our aim is Mr. Kabila should leave the office December 19th. We are serious. And starting now, 19 September, we will continue to demonstrate.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC, known as the Rassemblement. He was speaking with me from his hospital bed in the capital, Kinshasa. The Corporate Council on Africa, a leading United States business association focused solely on connecting business interests in Africa, has endorsed Zimbabwe's tourism minister, Walter Mzembe, for the post of Secretary General of the United Nations World Tourism Organization, which is set to fall vacant next year. Mzembe says one of his objectives, if elected as UNWTO Secretary General, is to bring the United States back into the fold of the organization.
One of my key messages in terms of vision is on universality of UNWTO, that we must build an organization, grow an organization that reflects universality. The entire membership of the United Nations at 192 countries should be reflected in terms of membership within the UNWTO, which currently boasts of 157 countries in terms of membership, 500 affiliate organizations. And I would like to preside over an organization that is absolute membership of the United Nations, because not a single country in the world today can boast that it does not host a tourism economy. It will either be a source or destination or both. So my message is carrying and gaining currency here in the United States, as reflected obviously by the endorsements that I received yesterday from Steve Haines and this Corporate Council for Africa, which is an extension by and large of the U.S. State Department in terms of trade and investment opportunities into Africa.
Minister, how is the campaign going so far as Africa's chosen candidate to lead the UNWTO?
So far, so good. Our latest endorsement has come from the United States through the Corporate Council for Africa, who yesterday publicly endorsed me. And I'm sure you know that the Corporate Council for Africa is a trade and investment authority on doing business with Africa. It was followed, of course, by reaffirmation of the African Union's own endorsement of my candidature, which was repeated by the Deputy AUC Chairperson, the African Union Commission Chairperson. I'm not seeking this position on the back of entitlement, because Africa has not held it in the past, but coming complete with craft competence for the job.
The AU recently introduced one passport, where several countries in Africa will enjoy the benefits of one passport. How would that benefit tourism in Africa?
Yeah, it's largely symbolic at this stage. What I would call very practical steps is when we begin to dispense with the visas, as is the case with what Rwanda has done now, Ghana. These are good examples of what should happen, improving openness, but obviously doing it in a measured way that mitigates some of the issues that we are beginning to experience, like insecurities that are targeting tourism. Some parts of Africa have really been victims of that, countries like Kenya and so forth. So we want to do it, but do it in a measured way that balance also our security interests. So we are for safe, secure, seamless borders. And if Europe is a European Schengen visa, where if one person enters through one country, he has entered 27 countries, we are also envisaging an African Schengen, which will facilitate entry even with your own passport from Cape to Cairo. At the moment, there's a negative travel balance out of Africa, meaning that there are more people traveling out than those coming in, and we want to plug those leakages and make sure that we retain African cash flows within the continent.
That was Walter Mzembe, Zimbabwe's tourism minister, speaking with Kioneso Jani of VOA Zimbabwe program. In Gabon, opposition presidential candidate Jean Ping says he hopes the international community will side with the truth, which he said is the vote of the people. This follows the Constitutional Court's ruling that President Ali Bongo won the August election. Paul Marie Gonjou, president, opposition leader Jean Ping's party, on the representative on the election commission of Jean Ping's party, says that Mr. Ping will soon be announcing a new action.
What is next? That we ask the people to be aware of what is going on, and that they have to be vigilant and to be mobilized for a new action, which will be decided very soon.
When you say a new action, what are you planning on doing? More demonstrations or what?
We will decide very soon, like I said. We cannot exactly today what we will do, but if should be demonstration, will be demonstration. If it's meeting, it will be meeting or whatever.
Does Mr. Ping believe that the international community is on his side?
The international community is on the side of the truth. And the truth is not what the Constitutional Court decided 2 days ago. The truth is the Gabonese people voted for Mr. Ping for the change. That's the truth. And we will make sure that what the voters decided will be enforced.
President Bongo on Saturday said that he's going to form a new government. Do you think Mr. Ping or people from the opposition will be willing to join in a new government that is formed by President Bongo?
Mr. Ping is not interested. the opposition we are representing is not interested.
Does Mr. Ping think that, or would he like for the international community to come in to mediate? And if he says mediation, what is it that the international community can mediate?
What we should understand is that we cannot spend our time and life to cheat. It's been 50 years that we have the same family, the same party in power in this country. And this family has always cheated to stay in power. In 2016, we said that it won't be the same thing like before. We want to go to the truth. We want decision, the people voting, be respected. That's what we want. If the international community can understand that and help us to make the truth, you know, be revealed, that's fine. If not, it will be a bad thing for the international community. It's going to be a bad thing for the Central African region, because we have the problem in DRC, we have the problem in Burundi, we have the problem in Central African Republic. I mean, this region is a big, big mess, is a big problem. And insofar as we don't go for democracy, we will still have the same problem in Central Africa. We have many, many threats coming in Central Africa. Terrorism, corruption, and what else? Only democracy, only responsible government, only good governance can fix this kind of threat. If not, it would be the people suffering always and always. And we don't want to go again and again with this kind of things in Africa, and above all in Gabon.
Paul-Marie Ganjou represents opposition leader Jean Ping's party on the Gabon Elections Commission. He was speaking with me from the capital, Libreville. President Barack Obama led the nation in dedicating the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture. Tens of thousands of people gathered on the National Mall in Washington on Saturday as the new $540 million museum opened its doors to the public. VOA's Chris Simpkins has more on the museum and those who made the journey to be among the first to see it.
Let us now open this museum to the world.
It's America's newest museum, and it's fitting that the country's first black president dedicated it.
But what this museum does show us is that even in the face of oppression, even in the face of unimaginable difficulty, America has moved forward. And so this museum provides context for the debates of our times.
Ringing a bell that hung in a church built by slaves and free blacks, Obama officially opened the National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington. It was a celebration for thousands who journeyed to the nation's capital to be among the first to see the museum.
The depiction that they used, from the chronological approach that they used, was exceptional.
The museum takes visitors on a journey through time, from the dark chapters of slavery through racial segregation and discrimination.
And a lot of people don't want to talk about slavery, but I think it's very important because, you know, our ancestors came from Africa. They were brought over here. They were slaves. And I don't think that it's something to be ashamed of. I think it's, you know, I think that they're very strong that they made it this far.
Many items in the museum are priceless heirlooms from family collections. The collections tell the stories not just of famous people, but also those of ordinary people determined to make their lives better, such as Alex Davis from Michigan, who participated in the civil rights demonstrations.
I think the kids today need to know that there was a history that needed to be changed, and somebody had to do that. So it's like I tell my kids, I march so that you don't have to.
People here say the museum will serve as a lasting showcase of the challenges African Americans have faced and how much they have contributed to the country's history. Chris Simpkins, VOA News, Washington.
And that's it for this Monday, September 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us and join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa will have a very productive week.
Next on Let's Talk. Money management. Are you good at it? Are you saving for the future? Retirement? College for your children and such? Join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing money management. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.